Hi, Keith. This is John Rivette.
Oh, okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, we had trouble trying to get you, so.
Well, I saw that a call came in to a voice message, then there was nothing on it, so I just called back to the number.
Well, thank you for doing that. So, Keith, hopefully this is clear at your end. It's not super clear here, and they'll clarify it. So, Bob Banks is in California, and it's not going to be on today's call, but we both will meet you in the June date when you're coming up here.
Okay. That's fine. Do you want to do this today or no?
Yes. I want to go ahead and ask questions Bob and I have developed for today, and then we'll get a copy of this recording, and when we meet in person, can follow up with some questions. We can look up some things, and you might say, I'll think about that and get back to you, or like that.
Okay.
Is that
yep.
okay?
Yep.
So, I need to send, I'm sure when you did the Jeff Charnley sesquicentennial interview?
Yeah,
A few years ago. And I haven't listened to it in a while. There might be a little duplication with what I'm going to ask today, but I have a feeling not as much as one might expect. But but you could, if you want to say, well, I already talked about that, that's fine. But I'm sure when you did that you got asked to sign a release form. It's kind of standard practice in oral history, and I may have forgotten to send you one, or I'll just bring it to the June date.
That's fine. No
okay.
problem.
So there were,
and you give me more credit if you think I'm going to remember what I answered before. But
that's quite all right. So there are two broad topics that I want to chat with you, or Bob and I want to chat with you about. One was the attempts at faculty unionization, and the other relates to the history of the faculty grievance procedure and its initial design.
Okay.
And
I'm hoping that as we get into this discussion, it'll stir my memory because,
right.
I don't have a lot of real good recall of all that. I have some, and we'll see what happens.
And that's all just fine. And so, we've got a lot of documents. As background, just so I don't remember if we've ever talked about, I was involved in the attempts to unionize faculty, the second and third attempts. The late 70s one and the early 80s one. I was not I guess we'd call them 78-79 academic year and the 80-81 academic year. I was not around in 71-72. I have pulled out some things like the unit determination hearings and know a little bit about that. And in terms of the grievance procedure, you may or may not recall or know that I was FGO for 8 years.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And it was partly doing some records related to that got Bob Banks and I interested in trying to write up a article or something about the history of the FGP, but also trying to maybe for audiences in the non-union higher ed area talk about it as a kind of dispute resolution procedure. So I don't care which of these two we go on first. If you care, I'll go to one or the other.
Well, actually, one leads to the other.
Okay, and would you explain that?
Okay. The whole unionization effort in 71, actually 72, hardly my involvement didn't start until 72, the whole grievance procedure thing was an outflow of the fact that there was a feeling that there wasn't a good way for faculty on faculty grievances to be brought forth and adjudicated in some fashion. That while we had a student grievance procedure, student to which ended up as the ombudsman position.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have this on the faculty side. So part of the development of the FGO thing was a response to the collective bargaining thing. And frankly, I think in some minds, if we created that, the unionization thing would go away. I think that was, they're linked together.
Uh-huh, I thought so. I mean, I would assume so, but.
Yeah. Now, what happened is I came on, if you want me just to
narrative,
or do you want to ask your question?
No, okay. No. Why don't you just go ahead?
And okay.
I don't know when you started working at MSU and title and that sort of thing. So.
Okay. I came to MSU in 68.
Okay.
And I came there off of a background of having organized, being a school counselor and organized the teachers in Royal Oak Schools, and having gone through a battle at that time, if you will, between the MEA and the AFP as to who would be the agent in Royal Oak.
Uh-huh.
And then I went, when the MEA affiliate was successful, and I ended up the chief negotiator for the teachers in Royal Oak. And so, you know, I had no real background in this. The MEA assigned people to me, and I was the one-eyed man in the kingdom of the blind. At the same time, I was taking classes to work on the doctoral degree, because I had already gotten my master's in counseling at that time. And I was going weekends to Ann Arbor to take my classes. And I ran into, in one of my classes, the assistant superintendent of the Southfield schools in the Detroit area. And he asked me about my interest in an administrative role. And they had an intern program run out of out of Ohio State that you were an intern for a year, and at that point you could choose to go into administration, or they could choose you to go into administration,
uh-huh.
or you could go into teaching ranks. So I did this. I went over. So 1 month after I negotiated the first contract in Royal Oak, I was now over into this administrative intern program in a neighboring district. And
so you were negotiating for the MEA?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Now, how all this ties to MSU will come clear.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm not in a rush.
Of course, a lot of the hotbed for unionization at that time of teachers was in the Detroit area. And in fact, Terry Herndon, who eventually became head of the Michigan Education Association and later went on to become head of the NEA, was in Warren Consolidated at that time, which is neighboring to Royal Oak and Southfield. And Jim Sissing, who was the exec for the Birmingham schools, which is adjacent to Royal Oak. And, of course, I got to know these guys. We worked when I was on the teacher side. We worked together. So I go over to Southfield, and instead of being assigned to a school as an assistant principal or something like that, I was assigned to the central office. And because I had the bargaining background, a month after I had finished the bargaining with the teachers in Royal Oak, I was on the management bargaining team in Southfield, sitting across the table from some of the very same people that I had, I made a mistake on the other.
Yeah.
Jim Sissing, that I said was in Birmingham, was actually in Southfield.
Okay.
And Don Cameron was in Birmingham. But anyhow, Jim Sissing ends up across the table from me. And here, just a month earlier, we had been on the other side of the table. Okay?
Gotcha.
Now, that all becomes relevant because later on, 2 years later on, I get asked to join the School of Labor and Industrial Relations because of being identified by a fellow who was in the school, who was sent to by the school, if you will, as a resource person to the middle schools. That's everybody. That was all the bigger school districts except Detroit.
Do you remember who that was? Doesn't matter.
No, at the moment I don't.
That's okay.
He was out of GE.
Okay.
Anyhow, we had a meeting of all these middle schools up at LCC, and we were all sitting around trying to get organized to help each other out from the management side because
right.
the MEA was very organized across the state on the teacher side. And after the morning session, I can't come up with this guy's name.
That's
right
okay.
now. But he asked if he could have lunch with me, and I said fine, and we sat down, and he said that, you know, he liked what I was talking about and my leadership and so on, and would I be interested in coming to Michigan State, because at that time the School of Labor and Industrial Relations had a grant from the State Department of Education to train teachers and administrators in this whole process.
Uh-huh.
And he was from GE. He had no interest in working with teachers and school districts. He didn't like that public sector and was trying to find a way out. And
sure.
Went back. He was reporting to Tom Patton at the time.
Right, okay.
And he went back to Patton the next day after our session and told Patton about me. And the next thing, I got a phone call from Patton asking me if they could come talk to me. So they came down to the Southfield schools and talked to me about my interest in coming to Michigan State and running this grant. And so I socked myself into a leave of absence from there and came up with the idea that I'd finish out this grant. And after I was there a couple of months or thereabouts, I was offered a tenure stream position at the school.
Got it.
And which I took, and so then that's how I got to Michigan State.
Okay. So what year was your start date for MSU?
August of 68.
Gotcha.
And because I was doing this from early in 68, I think might have even been January 68, I was there to run this grant thing.
Uh-huh.
And
I get
trying
it.
To think. Actually, yeah, okay, that's about right, if I remember the dates right. Anyhow, so then I was at the school, and I was giving workshops all over the state to school administrators because the MEA really wasn't interested. They had their own program, their own training, and so on, and they weren't particularly interested in help at that point from the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when, that's what I was doing. I was training, the school administrators from all over the state
mm-hmm.
in workshops. Well, then came...
Was it named yet PMPS, or was it a different title then?
Oh, it was PMPS.
Okay.
Yep. And that continued on until 71.
Okay.
And in 71, the director of the school, I'm drawing a blank.
Killingsworth?
Name right now. No.
No, Stieber.
Stieber.
Right.
Took a sabbatical.
Uh-huh.
And there was an issue of who And Killingsworth was asked, and he wouldn't do it.
Okay, he had had his time.
Yeah, and that, and event, so eventually I was asked. And I figure I was asked at that time because I had both labor and management experience.
Right.
And I was the only one trusted by both sides.
Right.
Within the department. Plus, I was non, I was not yet tenured. I was still
associate,
an assistant,
assistant.
Tenured.
Okay.
And so I, you know, frankly, I think I was not a threat to anybody. But
yeah.
In that process, during that time.
So you did take it.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. for 6 months.
Okay.
And the 6 months was from July of 71 to January of 72.
Uh-huh.
During this time, I was also starting an arbitration practice on the outside and doing both arbitration and fact-finding cases. And in those days, and you'll remember, there were a lot of fact-findings. That
sure.
was where schools were going all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And back in those days, Bob Howlett, who was
right.
chair of the commission, could appoint you. You know, he didn't. It wasn't the present status of giving you three names and you pick one, but he
uh-huh.
could appoint somebody. And as a result, I got appointed around the state to different places, and one of those places was the Ann Arbor Schools.
Okay.
Who had been in a that was that around the time that their administration building was burned and all this type of stuff. I mean, it was rough time. Anyhow, unbeknownst to me at that time,
this
is
a fact finder.
As a fact finder,
mm-hmm.
when I held those hearings and so on, sitting in the front row throughout those hearings was Pat Kerrigan, who was a trustee at Michigan State University. Okay?
Gotcha.
And also, Don Stevens was a trustee at Michigan State and head of Michigan
right.
AFL-CIO. And, of course, the word got back to him about my work and my and I was the fact that I was the acting director and so on. So in the summer toward fall of 71, I got a call. Well, I can tell you now. I mean,
that's fine.
At the time I didn't. It's history now.
Uh-huh.
I got a call from Oakland University asking for help because they were going to combine their faculty and staff,
right,
HR stuff together, and their labor relations, and wanting some help to identify a person. So I said, sure, I'll help you out, you know. And I went down, I worked with them, and they, of course they offered me the next
right.
thing, they offered me the job. I came back to campus. I asked, I told them I needed some time to think about this.
Right.
And I came back to campus, and I had the by this time, I had been elected to the Academic Senate
okay.
from the College of Social Science.
Right.
And I had gotten to know another name blank.
That's okay.
He was the assistant provost for years, Herman King.
Okay.
And I'd gotten to know him pretty well, and I had become known on campus because of my work and speaking out, as I was never hesitant to do, on the Academic Senate. And Killingsworth and I were both on the Senate at the same time. And, of
mm-hmm.
course, Killingsworth was, I guess, in many ways revered by many faculty for his background and knowledge and so on. And in those discussions, back in, I think, I don't remember when I was elected to it. It was could have been 70, but clearly was 71. There was discussion going on at that time about whether or not the faculty at Michigan State should look at collective bargaining. And Killingsworth and I were looked at as resources on the Senate to talk to this issue when it came up at the Senate and so on. I guess it wasn't called the Senate then. It was the Senate was the bigger group. It was the council, the academic council, not Senate. As a result, you know, the visibility of that and the visibility to then Cliff Lurton, who was president, as well as the provost, and who was John Cantlin at that point, and Herman King, who was the assistant. Well, anyhow, after the offer from Oakland, I happened to run into Herman and mentioned to him what had happened. And unbeknownst to me, he took it back to the provost, and either he or the provost took it to Cliff Wharton. And I had asked for a week, I think it was. Well, anyhow, I was running a program over in Kellogg Center and walking down the hall, and Wharton was coming toward me. Dr. Wharton said, "I want to talk to you."
Right.
And we went off into a side room, and he said, "What's this I hear about having an offer?" And I told him, and he said, "Well, I've always thought we needed something like that here." And he said, "Let me go back and talk to my vice presidents." That was on a Tuesday. I didn't hear anything on Wednesday. On Thursday, I come into the office, and there's phone slips from Dr. Wharton and from Jack Breslin wanting to see me, or wanting me to call them. And it was that day at 5 o'clock that I was also supposed to get my answer to Oakland. So I went to see, I called over and went over to see Dr. Wharton, and he said that he had talked to the vice presidents, there was interest, and but he wanted me to go see Jack Breslin, John Cantlin, and Roger Wilkinson, who Roger being the vice president for business. And so I proceeded to try to get on their calendars. I went to see Jack, and Jack and I hit it off immediately. And it wasn't a question of whether I was going to be hired. It was a matter of when and what my title was going to be, basically. And I asked to make it January 1 of 72. And we came up with assistant vice president. And then I went to see Roger because I couldn't get to see Cantlin early enough in the day. His calendar was booked. Roger and I hit it off well. I tried to get in to see Cantlin. I couldn't. I went back to see Wharton, told him what had happened. And I went then. He said, "Well, you know, then count on it or whatever. You know, we'll do this." And I went to the phone and called Oakland, told them no, and went back to see Cantlin after 5 o'clock that evening and talked to him. And we hit it off fine.
Good.
And so when Stieber returned in January, I was over to the administration building. At the January board meeting, my appointment was taken to the board, and it turns out the two champions for my appointment were Don Stevens and Pat Kerrigan. And I was appointed at that point. So now that's January of 72. During 72, more and more talk came about the bargaining and, you know, and organizing.
Right.
And in the fall of 72, the MEA wanted a conference to talk about bargaining unit. And the representative for the MEA, now having moved from Southfield to the regional, was Jim Sissing, the same guy I had been sitting across the table from in Southfield and whom I'd known when and worked with when I was teaching. Okay. And so we had to come to some kind of an agreement as to what the nature of the bargaining unit would be.
Right.
Sigmund Nassau, right, from the School of Labor and Industrial Relations, was president of the AAUP chapter.
Okay.
And the AAUP filed an intervening petition to be on the ballot as
right.
well. Okay. All of this went together, ending up resulting in an election in October of 72. You may have the actual dates. I don't remember.
It's not in front of me, but go ahead.
But that was the first election.
Right.
And the campaigning and so on, all that went on in the fall of 72. Then when it was turned down, then the issue, as I remember it, and this gets a little fuzzier, turned to, what do we do now to address some of these concerns and not have this come back again, okay? And part of that led to the formation of the FGO position.
So could you repeat that again? The election was held, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was like 60-40, no thanks. It was based on a bargaining unit that had been set by Merck in November 25, 1970, when Howlett was chair and his commission were Walsh and Milmet. And that determined, part of the bargaining unit.
They didn't set it specifically for Michigan State, did they? In 70? I think they set the guidelines. Part of the issue at Michigan State was that when we talked about bargaining unit was there were certain colleges who were clearly going to be anti that, they didn't want in, if you will. The guidelines were to make the largest community of interest out of Merck, and the largest community of interest were full-time faculty.
What I grabbed and was quoting was actually an AUP petition as an intervener, and the Merck ruling was that they dismissed the petition, and I think are saying that the appropriate would be everybody, or clearly nearly okay. everybody.
So you're telling me there was a unit determination issue at Michigan State prior to 72.
What I'm holding in my hands, and I could be wrong, appearances for the employer is Leland Carr, which isn't surprising.
Yeah.
For the petitioner is James White. For the intervener is a David Klein. And they're basing, they quote things that related to hearings held before Spurka earlier and other things at other facilities and are turning down. And I don't have what exactly the intervener or petitioner asked for. But
And that's dated 70.
This is dated November 25, 1970. Based upon the above findings of fact and conclusions of law, it's ordered that the petition herein be and is hereby is dismissed.
Now, that's interesting because that doesn't even shake any memory with me.
But that's before your time here.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know that. I mean, to my knowledge, that was never even brought up again.
Okay.
Back when I came on board in 72.
So to tell you the truth,
it was all new players, actually.
In 89, I made an inquiry of Raleigh Hopgood of MFT related to the questions. Mr. Rivette asked whether an election could be conducted in a unit of MSU facility other than all instructors. And this Mark Cousins, writing to Raleigh as his attorney, one of them, says in November 70, the Employment Relations Commission specifically found that a faculty unit of a single college at MSU was inappropriate since the entire faculty performed similar work under similar conditions. See 1970 Merck Labor Opinion 1029, copy enclosed. This is consistent with commission decisions which have been found units of less than the entire faculty to be inappropriate. See Wayne State University 1972 Merck Labor Opinion 140, copy enclosed. Finally, the commission has reaffirmed that the appropriate unit at MSU would be all faculty. Michigan State University, 1982, Merck Labor Opinion, 640, copy enclosed. And I simply started reading the oldest one first.
No, and that's fine. And when we met in the fall of 72, there was some discussion about, you know, singling out certain schools as
right.
professional schools, like the medical school and so on. But we didn't. We went with the full. Then it shifted to the date of the election. When was this going to happen? And more, as I remember it now, more time was spent discussing. Let me tell you a little side story.
Yeah.
We're meeting in this room, and Sig Nassau is there representing AUP,
mm-hmm.
and he demanded, I guess in the terminology is an Excelsior list.
Right.
He wanted one immediately or something of that order.
Okay.
You know? And...
And what did he want exactly, for those who might not know in the future, listen to this, what it is that's being asked for?
It's a list of the people who would be eligible to vote.
Right.
And my position that I took was that he only had a right to this at the point at which Merck approved that we were going to have this election and that we were had the right bargaining
right.
unit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he really took off after me on the basis that I had no right of withholding
Funny.
This, that he was faculty and I was just administration and so on. Do you remember Sig?
Yeah, a little. And anyways, at this point, you had just been his colleague.
Yeah, right.
Right,
and
so it made it all more funny.
Yeah, so he wanted to see the president. So I went in to see Dr. Wharton and I told him what the dispute was. And Cliff said, fine, bring him in. And he brought him in, and Sig told him what he wanted. And Dr. Wharton said, if Keith says this is what the rules are, this is what the rules are. That's it.
Gotcha.
And that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
These were contentious times. And if you put it
right.
in the context of what was going on in the world in 68, early 70s, and what was the restlessness on campus and so on. I mean, this was not unusual, you know.
Right.
You know.
So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So were you getting legal advice, or in any of your schooling, had you gotten into doing some law school training in terms of understanding some of the things we were just talking about? And
Okay. No, I didn't go to law
okay.
school before that. I did go to law school later, okay?
Okay.
All my training was in the field.
Right.
I didn't have, my degrees were not in any of this. This was one of those times when you were learning on the fly.
Yeah.
Yes, I had access when I was representing teachers. I had access to Irwin Ullman,
uh-huh.
who was the attorney for the MEA. When I was in the school district, I had an attorney that I could go to.
Right.
And I'm trying his
That's okay.
somebody, and I can't remember. But what happened? And then when I at the university, I had Leland Carr
right.
Available to me, and. during this time, of course, I had also become an active arbitrator and mediator. Not a state mediator, but a private mediator. And so I met and, in effect, was schooled on the fly by a lot of lawyers. Later on, after finishing my PhD, and I was in the administration, I did go back to Cooley Law School for a while. And then basically I went back there to learn contract law and process and that type of thing. And I, but I never planned to go to the before the bar, so that I didn't I didn't finish up.
Can I ask you another question?
Yep.
So both when you went from labor to management and then when you're dealing here and then becoming an arbitrator, did you ever have difficulties that someone wondered, can you really be fair, sir?
Believe it or not, once.
Really?
And my position immediately was, I'm out of here. You know, I'm here as a creation of your contract.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have faith in me, then I have no business being here. The point I emphasize, and even to others who asked me about that, was that I was a creation of the contract of the parties. I didn't have a, you know, as the saying goes, I didn't have a dog in the fight. My job was to call balls and strikes.
Uh-huh.
And in many cases, I was more acceptable because I had been on both sides.
Right.
I arbitrated up until a year ago last January. So then I decided enough. So I arbitrated from about 19. I think I went on AAA list in 1970, I think.
Wow.
It was. But I was doing fact findings and stuff from 68 on. So from 68, 70, depending on which number you want, up until January of 2017.
It's a fascinating record.
With thousands of cases.
Oh,
I mean, it ended up in thousands by the time I was through.
So I diverted with a couple of things, but we could go in a couple directions about the bargaining unit determination or talking back to the creation of the faculty grievance procedure. Your choice.
At this point, I would only point out that there were two more efforts. You were involved with those of unionization, and the no vote actually grew each time. But what had happened in the meantime on the campus is that the academic governance system took a major turn following the change of presidencies from Dr. Hanna on. It became much more viable. It became the committee systems worked much more. The Faculty Affairs Committee became, and Bob Banks can fill that one in because he mm-hmm. met with the Faculty Affairs Committee, I think, every week or every 2 weeks, whatever mm-hmm. it was. But over that period of time, which started about 1968 or 69, was the turnover of when Cliff Wharton came in. From that period right on through successive provosts and presidents, the academic governance system, I think, took on a role that, and in many ways addressed a number of the issues that were being used to encourage unionization. Unfortunately, probably not the biggest one, which was the difference in salary between the liberal arts, you know, under English and humanities faculties.
Right.
And some of the professional faculties. I mean, that was always an issue, probably still an issue today. But many of the effectiveness of the committee system, effectiveness of the academic council, I think took on a whole new interest.
Uh-huh.
And I think it took on more interest, too, among many of the faculty in engineering and business and places like that, because they saw the handwriting on the wall. They were either going to get involved and make this work, make the governance system work, or they were going to have unionization, which those schools were very much against.
So we covered a lot of my questions. You named many people that Bob Banks wrote a series of questions, and they're some of the same names like Horace King, Lee Winder, Jack Kinziger that he was going to ask you about.
I can tell you, Kinziger, you know, it was a matter of succession of people, and they all, the train all went the same direction. I mean, they all, when Bob was in the administration, came into the provost office in his role. Well, let me go back and
go
say
ahead.
That at the time I was put in position by Cliff Wharton, the discussion at that time was, whether or not I would have a role in the faculty area as well as the staff area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there was pushback, that the world wasn't there yet, putting them together. They are now at many institutions, but they weren't, and they still aren't at Michigan State, for the employment part.
Right.
For benefits, for labor relations, for all of that, from all intent and purposes, they're together. But for the employment and employment functions and so on. Cliff said to me back then that if the faculty unionized, then he would recommend putting them together. But he wasn't going to disturb it and put them both together, because mm-hmm. there was going to be a concern out of the provost office, so big time. So since they never did unionize, it never did come together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but Bob Banks was then appointed in the provost office
mm-hmm.
after Herman King to handle the faculty personnel issues and so
mm-hmm.
on. And Bob and I, having been colleagues in the School of Labor and Industrial Relations, we worked together. We worked together just great. We've had a great relationship for a long, long time. And, we got to a point where if one of us was going to change a policy or something, we'd contact the other one to see what effect it might have on
right.
the opposite side. And, I mean, it just worked very well. And so there was no need. And I think it probably is working that way today with Terry Curry in that position. In fact, even since I stepped out of the position in 2002, they've put faculty records together with staff mm-hmm. records.
Right.
And so on. So it just, because of the people in those positions, it worked well.
So I think this hour was really excellent, and I learned a lot. And I could see one possibility is we just kind of ramp up today, and then we can follow some of Bob's specific questions related to some of the choices, and you could think a little bit more about the early FGP and what, if anything, you kept in contact knowing about it, if that sounds okay.
Yeah, that's fine. When we get, It's the 11th, I believe, Monday the 11th, that I said I'll be in town there.
I'm going to pick up my calendar so I make sure
I'm agreeing with you. I think probably the earliest I could do something there is going to be like 4:30 or something of that order.
I have Monday the 11th at 3, but you're saying...
I think 4 or 4:30 is going to be... Because I'm...
And you're gone the next morning?
Well, yeah, what's happening, I'm going to be staying at my daughter's in Rockford. Uh-huh. And actually, I was supposed to be watching my granddaughters because my wife and daughter are going to be in Ireland. But their other grandparents are coming in to watch them on Monday, since I was going to be there down in East Lansing for this Highfields charity golf thing.
Right.
So I don't have to hustle back Monday night to care for them, but I will be going back to Rockford. So it's a matter of when I'll be out of the charity golf thing, which I think is going to be, we're starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I think by 4 o'clock I'll be clear of that. And
would you prefer that to Tuesday morning, the 12th?
Yeah, because I would have to drive back again from Rockford.
I missed that. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you said you were staying over here. Okay.
No.
Okay.
But, you know, if you guys would like to have dinner together or something, that would be fine, or we can do it without that.
Let's just say we'll start at 4:30 and have dinner together.
Okay, that's great. That's great.
If you're not going to be too exhausted from your big golf outing.
No.
I don't know.
Not for somebody who plays golf about 3 days a week as it is. So
which course are you playing when you're here?
We'll be playing the main course down on campus there.
The MSU West, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I haven't played that in a couple of years. A while ago, obviously before Jack died, Terry and I would go with Jack and sometimes with a grad student, Pat McHugh. They're different people at different years. And the four of us would play. We always played with Jack on the East, I think.
I'll be darned. I didn't know Jack played. I've played with Terry a number of times.
Right.
So
this is still on tape. But anyways, Terry wasn't great at first, but boy, did he get good, and he started really playing a lot. I never was very good at golf, but I was a golf caddy at Birmingham Country Club from when I turned 14 until I finished my before I went to Ann Arbor for college in August of 1968. So,
we're from down in the same neck of the woods. Then I used to live in Beverly Hills, right south of the Birmingham Country Club.
So I went to Pembroke Elementary, then Derby Junior High, and then Birmingham Seahome.
Oh yeah, I didn't come out to. My parents didn't move out there till I finished high school in Detroit, but my brother and sister went to school there. They would have been. Let's see, my brother would have been ahead of you. My sister would have been behind you.
I had a lot of family, Detroit family, mostly on the east side. So we spent a lot of time in Detroit. But I did caddy at Birmingham Country Club, and I got to be a pretty good caddy, and I caddied some pro tournaments, like I did Buick Open twice. And, I did something at Oakland Hills. It was a professional and a couple others. So I understood. I used to say I can't play very well, but I can stick most anybody. And in those days, you know, you literally, as a decent caddy, you walked off to get measurements. Everything wasn't marked on the ground and all that.
Sure.
You kept your own little book and, you know, you get a sense of this golfer and what they would need to get from where they were to get onto the green. And we also had pro-am. So one of the other things that I did was I caddy for Barry Gordy Jr.
When I went to community, before going to Ann Arbor to school, I went to Highland Park Community College. And so living out in Beverly Hills there, I ended up working for a place called the Golf Mart that was over on Woodward Avenue.
Okay.
And from that, I ended up being hired by Red Run, the pro shop at Red Run, to service their carts and so on, and to be do the handicapping and stuff for the club. As a result, I ended up on Mondays being able to go and play, like Birmingham Country Club and Oakland Hills and so on, just like the caddies could do.
Interesting. There were very few caddies that were from Birmingham schools. Most of the kids were, from Berkeley or Ferndale, or there were a lot of Catholic kids because it became an issue on Sunday mornings in terms of who was going to change their plans with their, you know, parents about Mass and stuff, and who was available Sunday morning. Yeah. So there were a lot of Birmingham Brother Rice kids, I think.
We had a lot of, over at Red Run, we had a lot of caddies because Royal Oak was big, you know, bigger. So we had a lot of Royal Oak kids as caddies there.
Are there some key questions I failed to cover? I mean, Bob has a bunch, and I'm going to wait and let him, and you can think a little bit about. But this was very helpful.
This is the part I remember the most. The part that I don't remember as much is because I wasn't as involved with it.
Right. Understood.
Was the creation of the FGO. But
We had a few questions, like if you had any relationship with Michael Harrison, his first FGO, or if you're familiar with Repus's grievance at the time.
Both the answers to those are both yes.
Okay, so I will follow up to ask you about those.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm understanding that you didn't have much involvement with the elections 2 and 3 that I did, but I might have a question here or there about
I did have, in the sense that I was, you know, Bob was around by that time, but I still was the representative to make sure that the details of the election were handled, you know, the place and the time and the description and the Excelsior list and that kind of stuff from a technical point of view. And Bob and I did talk about get involved in strategy about who to get involved and so on.
I well plan to ask you some questions about efforts 2 and 3. And I have interviewed Phil Korth and Gladys Beckwith and Dot McMeekin, trying to set up one with Coletta Mosier. Talked to a couple other people, so... I got to go listen to some of that and see what I can remember.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much, Keith.
How are we going to set a time and place for you?
Well, I'm going to let you send Bob and I an email at some point saying, let's meet at 4:15 at, and, you know, it can be the Kellogg Center. It can be, you know, you tell us.
Okay.
I mean, we could get a place on campus, you know. Otherwise, it wouldn't be hard. Meet the library where I am now. But you can decide what's convenient for you. Just not a noisy bar would be best.
No, well, and Kellogg works as well as anything because it's easy to get to. It can be quiet.
Yep.
That'd
be my first thought, my preference.
You know, well, let's assume it's going to be Kellogg.
Okay.
So then it's simply a matter of what time.
Mm-hmm. And you can, you have my cell number, I assume?
I think so.
I think I included whenever I send Gmails.
Yeah. I think I've got it.
I'll be with Bob and we'll be all set.
Well,
really,
let's do this. Let's set it at 4.
Okay.
At Kellogg, I assume they start serving then. I don't know.
Oh, sure.
Okay. And
the state room's what you're saying.
Yes, and if there's any need to change it, at least we have it set. And then,
perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds wonderful.
Great. Okay.
Have a great
Thank
day,
you.
Keith. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.